Lake Effect continues now on Milwaukee's NPR. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Joy Powers. Yesterday on the show, we featured a new novel by a Wisconsin writer featuring a family whose difficult husband and father suddenly dies, then turns out not to be dead. The book explores how the protagonist and other members of the family process that development.
Our next guest is also a Wisconsin writer with a new novel featuring a family whose difficult father and husband suddenly dies and then turns out not to be dead. And this book, too, explores how the protagonist and his family process that development.
But for as similar as the plots sound, they're actually quite different books. Wauwatosa writer Tom Matthews is the author of Raising the Dad, which is at turns funny, dark, and thought-provoking. He talked about the novel with Lake Effect's Mitch Tyke.
So how do we feel about spoilers? We can talk about the basic premise here, right?
Right, yeah.
Oh, so there's a big development that happens. It's probably about 40 pages into this book, and I don't think we can talk about it without explaining what's going on. So
right.
John Husted is your hero.
Mm-hmm.
Husted.
Yeah.
He is living what sounds like a pretty standard, if unexciting, middle-age experience in a southern Wisconsin city. What else should we know about John as the book opens?
Well, let me back up a little bit, because this is sort of rooted very loosely in my story. My father was a doctor down in Beloit, where I was born. He died of a heart attack when I was 10, which was traumatic in all the ways you'd imagine. Jump forward about 15 years, and I have this dream. And in the dream, a doctor friend of my father's comes to me, and gravely tells me he has to tell me something. He takes me into this very sparse room, and there is my father, silent and stilled by a devastating system failure, beyond any kind of communication or engagement, but he's alive. And I found that enormously profound. It just really affected me. Just to be in the same room with him and touch his warm skin and know you're breathing the same air, it really, really, in a way no other dream ever has, really stuck with me.
Things diverge a little bit in the book, though, because
yes.
John is somewhat further along in life, both when a little further along when his father dies, but much further along when this, you know, shocking truth
right.
comes to him.
Right. Jump forward another 20 years, I'm starting a graduate writing program at Mary. I just need a something to write in the story. So I remember this dream. I try the short story. It goes well. It strikes a really nice balance between really deep emotion but also unexpected sort of mordant humor. My next semester is a novel writing class. I don't think I can sustain this really wildly seemingly implausible premise across a book, but I figure I'll take a shot. That also feels good. It becomes my thesis project. It's a book. But that is the premise. This man who has a fairly typical dysfunctional family life suddenly, remarkably, is made aware of the fact that the father they all thought had been dead for decades is alive in this silent state. He has to decide if they can even know about what he knows and maintain the family. So that is his burden.
You say the family's on the verge of collapse. His mom is dealing with the onset of dementia. He has a teenage daughter who is turning into a teenage daughter. He has a brother who's just gotten out of jail. And he has a marriage that it sounds like, just from your portrayal, is not catastrophically horrible, but, you know, the kind of death by a thousand paper cuts model.
It's going cold. So there's just a lot of relationships that are not uncommon, but all things that he has to take into account as he has to move forward with this surprise that's been given to him.
Speaking as someone who every once in a while has some strange dreams, a lot has to happen to give them any kind of narrative arc. Can you talk about this process, you know, of turning it into first a short story and then a novel? You know, you're going from this single idea to wading in through the kind of complex social issues that are also touched on by this situation.
Yeah, the dream touched me because I think I had, and I think probably still do, a fairly pragmatic view of a life that has fallen into this condition. I think it's time to let them go. They're not serving a purpose, so to speak. But I realized in the dream there was something profound there. And it really sort of, I say sometimes it sort of makes an end-of-life statement I'm not sure I agree with, but I think that's what makes it interesting. And I also think, without giving anything away, by the end of the book, the father has kind of healed this family without ever doing anything. Just his presence helps. So that was kind of the thing pulling me forward. And it also was just this very bizarre circumstance of this guy. He's also, my research told me it's not that amazing that you could sustain a life that long if you just commit to this very relentless care. You know, Terry Schiavo lived for 15 years and could still be alive if they hadn't been all that court stuff. So I had to do a lot of work to sort of sell the premise. But the fact is, it just falls on John's head to sustain his father's care going forward, financially, emotionally. There's a spot where the father is, which almost becomes another character in the story. And also, what I really liked about it is John, just by necessity, spends a lot of time in solitude at his father's bedside and starts mulling over his life with his father, who he doesn't really remember.
He's stunned to find out that his father was really kind of a funny guy.
Yeah. The father was, you know, a very successful doctor, but way too committed to his job. He wasn't close to his son.
How much of that is pulled from your own experience?
My father was kind of a mover and shaker in the hospital scene in Beloit, and he was working a lot. And when he was home, he was in his den working some more. And I wish I had more memory of him. So John, but he also, like my father, who I can still go down to Beloit and meet people who were his patients or work for him, and he's just revered down there. But there's part of me saying, you know, am I getting the whole story? I would love to really learn more about my father and maybe even learn some things that aren't so flattering. And John, again, just because he has all this time on his hands, starts learning about his father and learns something about him that is troubling, but it humanizes his father in a way that would never have happened if this hadn't all been given to him.
One of the things that hit me as I was reading this and kind of considering the implications of what John is going through in the story is a lot of us think of these end-of-life issues, the Terry Schiavo case, for example, a very, very famous example, as really ethical and political sorts of issues. And at the same time, for the people who are most connected to them, John in this case, he has to think about it in those terms, but he also has to consider it in very personal, very emotional terms.
Yeah. Part of it is financial. The only other person who knows is his wife, who is kind of a voice of, you know, she provides the straight talk when John won't really confront some of the things he has to confront. But financially, this is a burden. In terms of his career, it's a burden. He starts screwing up with his job because of this. Again, it's just a relentless care that this his father needs. And it's also just, how can you not bring this news to your mother and your brother? But briefly, the mother, because of her dementia, quite possibly could not emotionally handle the news. And John's brother is this very sketchy person.
Let's talk about John's brother here, because we've had you on the show any number of times in your work as a rock writer, and so there's a lot of the heavy metal scene in northern Illinois and southern Wisconsin from about the last 30 years that makes its way into this. That had to be a little bit enjoyable to write.
Well, I knew Mike, the brother, is a very unpleasant person, and I knew that I needed, not just for my reader, but for me, I just had to find something. Not that I liked about him, but at least it was interesting. I am a ravenous reader of rock and roll memoirs, the shabbier the better. So I was reading, it was either Slash of Guns N' Roses or Nikki Sixx of Motley Crue.
Famed authors that both of them are.
Yes, men of letters, at least tattoos.
Yeah.
But I was reading one of those, and that's it. Mike was an aspiring heavy metal singer. Actually, for the craft he was pursuing, was very, very good at it, but he also got drawn into the lifestyle. And having signed a major label contract, his life immediately blew up, and that's his backstory is he had a taste of the fame, and now he's just a sad figure who John worries that Mike would recognize that having the father back is really just something to exploit for a lawsuit. Mike would not, because Mike and the father hated each other up until the time the father died, quote unquote. And that's the other dilemma, that John doesn't know if he can trust his brother to be as moved by this as he is. So there are two very credible reasons for maybe John should just let this end and never tell them. But that's just, how do you do that? So, yeah, it's complicated.
How hard was this book to pitch?
Well, it took about twice as long to sell as it took to write. I am fortunate to have a good string of credentials where I was able to get it to a lot of agents, but they all passed, and I knew why, because it's a strange mix of really deeply, I hope, moving sentiment, but also it's got Mike ends up a singer in a Motley Crue tribute band. So it's, you try to sell that and, you know, these other issues, and it's tricky.
Not a ton of books set in a fictionalized Beloit, Wisconsin, either,
right.
I wouldn't imagine.
Yeah, yeah. So it was, it honestly, I finished it, I think, late 2011, and I didn't sell it until 3 years ago, and it's been sitting at the publisher for 3 years. So it's yeah. But for reasons if they can't, especially now, if it can't be very cleanly slotted into some pigeonhole, there aren't a lot of takers. So I just resolved to not give up and finally got it done. But it was, if you go back to this dream I had, it's been 30 years.
Wow. But it has a home, it has a major publisher, and it's going to be on bookshelves in the next few weeks.
Yeah, it's very exciting. I've had one novel previously published, but it was a small publisher, and honestly, I don't think it made it into many stores at all, except locally, just through my efforts. So it will be nice to actually get it on the shelves and just again, from the spark of an idea that turned into just a homework assignment to this thing that sort of consumed my life for a long time. It'll just be nice to see it between covers and on the shelves.
You have any other dreams that are sitting out there waiting for waiting for a treatment, option?
This truly was. I have a very, very, very vivid dream life, but this was the one that really, really felt like something someday it was going to have its shot. So here it is.
Well, Tom Matthews, I think we can all be grateful. It's great stuff. Thank you so much, and again, congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Wauwatosa novelist and occasional Lake Effect essayist Tom Matthews' new book is called Raising the Dad. He spoke with Lake Effect's Mitch Tyke, and the two of them will reprise their conversation Tuesday evening on stage at Boswell Book Company.